Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet by the two dots. The Gemara says, "How Oved Kuchavim Da'av Ka'amar Leli Yisrael." There was this non-Jew that was persecuting a Jew. To'ol Asafstata Vishodi Lechivai or Lechivata. You should cut the grass, the hay, and supply it to my animals. B'Shabta on Shabbat. This is one of the cases brought up at the end of Perek Ben Sorer Umureh. And the issue of Yehareg Ve'al Yavor, this is one of the instances, what's called Lahanat Atzmo, where a goy forces a Jew to do malacha, but he doesn't intend necessarily for the malacha itself, but for his own benefit. Here he wants him to feed his animal, he wants him to cut the hay, and to give the shachat to the animal on Shabbat. But he says, Ve'ilo, if you don't do that, Katilna Lacha, I'll kill you, Kedekalilna B'ploni Bar Yisrael, like I killed so-and-so, Damrile Bashalik de Rabbi Shabbat, because I told him cook me up a dish on Shabbat, Velo Bashalik. You know, sure enough, he didn't cook it for me. Vikatilte. And sure enough, I killed him. So here, this guy has a track record of killing people who don't do whatever they're supposed to do for him on Shabbat. And there's been this Jew missing for a while, nobody knows what happened to him, and all of a sudden he spills the beans that he killed him because this guy did not cook for him on Shabbat. Shamad Debetu, the wife of this individual who's been missing all this time, overhears this conversation. She goes to Abaye and says, listen, can you release me now? He said that he killed my husband. Sheata Talata Rigli. He pushed her off for 3 regalim. Hamala Ravader Bava. So Ravader Bava gives her a little advice and says, Zil Kamed Rav Yosef. Go to Rav Yosef instead of Abaye. Rav Yosef is Abaye's Rebbe. The Kharif Sakina, because he has a sharp knife. Here, I mean, a sharp knife means that he's a posek. He's a ready and able posek, and he will be more likely to come to Achra than Abaye on this matter. He says, let me give you a hint. Go to Rav Yosef. Azla Kamei. She went to him. Pashat Niham Matnita. He resolved the issue from this Tanaic statement, which is Oved Kochavim Sheyem Mocher Perot Bashuk. And Oved Kochavim that is selling Perot in the shuk, va'almar, and he's announcing about these perot. Perot alalu del orlahin. These perot are orla perot, perot in their first 3 years. Perot azekahin, shel netarevayhin. So he announces all these things that are all asurim, and he's making announcements about his fruit, about his produce, his merchandise here, and saying, this is orla, this is netarevay, da 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 da. Then the Tanaic work there says, lo amar klum. It's not meaningful at all. The reason is because it's not telling you about the iser of the objects, but rather he's trying to talk up what he's selling. Orla is a code word for they're young. It's coming from a young tree. It's coming, these are fresh young fruits. The same thing with neta revai, fruit from the earlier part of the cycle of the trees. And then shela zeka is interesting. What the definition of Ezekah here actually has huge nafkuminot, and nafkuminot alocha in this year of Shvi'it. Rashi over here quotes the first interpretation of what Shel Ezekah is. It says, mi pardes, mi uzak, vigadur. It's a regeder savivlo, that this is a place that is encircled, fenced in, l'shomro, in order to protect it, meaning that's a guarded area, v'hish not Shvi'it, and it's the middle of the Shemitah year. V'kashali, says the Mai Isur Yeshkan. What problem is there by the mere fact that it is encircled, it is a fence around it? There's no Isur. Imavar Zmana Biur. If it's already past the time where you have to eliminate these fruits from your possession, then Loshna Minam Shumar, Loshna Minam Mufkar Asurim. Doesn't matter where you get them from. Once you pass over the expiry date for Perot Shvi'it, then you can't have them no matter what they're from, whether it's Hefker, whether it is from the Mishumar. Rashi's of the opinion that biur literally means biur, the va'erotam, to eliminate them. There are a slew of rishonim, like the Ramban and others, who believe that it means to be mafkir them, and then you just mafkir them, and then you can take them back into your possession. But Rashi believes there's an actual biur. But he says, after the zman of biur, it's irrelevant whether they came from mishumar min mufkar. And on the other hand, v'kodem azman, elu ve'elu mutarim. For the zman of biur, doesn't matter if it comes from a mishumar field, doesn't even matter if it comes from a hefker field, the perot are mutarim. The perot are not nasim chetza of isur, just because they came from a field that was mishumar. There may be a restriction against guarding your field and not allowing people in your field. But one who does guard his field doesn't necessarily make the peirot into chefza of isur. So Rashi says, I don't understand this explanation. And therefore, a little further down, Rashi says, uchu medumali, da zeka shem ir sheba Eretz Yisrael. That zeka is a name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. Quotes in Sefer Yoshua, the city's mentioned. Over here we have Tel Azeka. Very locally, that's where the battle between Goliath and David takes place in Emek Ha'ilah, but the troops of Shaul's army are on Tel Azeka at the time. So I don't know if it's the same Azeka, but he says it references a specific city. It's outside of Eretz Yisrael. And he's saying, these are from Azeka. He's giving them Shevach. They come from Eretz Yisrael. These are great Peirot. So that's what Rashi says. Tosafot quotes Rashi and says, "Ve'ein nira l'Rabbeinu Tam." Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rashi and he says, "Behedja Tanya b'Torat Kohanim, v'tinvei nizirecha lo tibzor min ha-mishumar." That's from something that is guarded. Iata butzer, v'ata butzer min ha-mufkar. You're allowed to harvest from something that is not mishumar, that is mufkar. You're not allowed to harvest from something that is mishumar, that is guarded. Rabbeinu Tam sees that as a isur chetza. That from an peirot that are in a field that is mishumar, you may not harvest those fruits. You may not take those fruits. Later on in the Tosfot, the Ri seems to differentiate and says that Torat Kohanim is talking about the way that you're botzer. That when it comes to a field that is mufkar, you're allowed to be botzer b'shinui. You can't be botzer the normal way that you harvest. You can't harvest in normal quantities, in commercial quantities during the Shvi'it, but you can make harvest in small quantities, in small ways. But if it's a field that is mishumar, that is guarded, you're not allowed to harvest whatsoever. Now, it doesn't mean that the peirot are an isur chepza, but nevertheless, there is an isur to be botzer them. Why does this have relevance? It has relevance for heter mechira. In utilizing heter mechira, there are people that hold of heter mechira, and that it works, and that the halachic framework works. There are those that don't hold that the heter mechira works. But even for those that don't hold of heter mechira, if they come to a point where they're served those items of heter mechira, there's no iser chetza in the object of heter mechira. That's only true if you hold like Rashi. If you hold like Rashi, where mishumar does not have a din of chetza shel isur, then that's fine. But if you hold like the Rabbeinu Tam, that means that if the heter mechira halachically doesn't work, that means that in the end, these peirot are coming from fields that are mishumar by a Jew. And if they come from fields of mishumar, it makes it into a chefzah shel isur. That means, according to Rabbeinu Tam, if heter mechira fails, meaning that halachically it doesn't work, then you can't just say that the chefzah is still mutar, because even though there was an aveira done, but the peirot themselves remain mutarim. That's just not true, according to Rabbeinu Tam. So this adds a dimension of issue to this question of heter mechira, which is that if you don't believe that the heter mechira works, can you eat? Or if you're invited over to someone's house, who is serving heter mechira peirot, can you eat those items that are there without a worry? So if you believe the chefza is mutar, then okay. In the end, you are eating something that is not isur, even though you don't hold of the methodology by which it was brought to market. On the other hand, if you hold like the Rabbeinu Tam, if it doesn't work, you actually have peirot that are asurim, that are problematic in the chefza themselves, and that means that you can't partake in them, you can't eat those peirot. So in general, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Avadya Yosef, also in a Psak Halacha, says that if you're invited over to someone's house who's serving heter mechira, that even though if you normally don't eat it, that you can partake, you can eat it because the peirot are not chefza shel isur. It is probable by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in some of the earlier Sfarim before they were heavily redacted, that he leans heavily towards the heter mechira being okay. He never comes to that final conclusion, but in his earlier works on Shvi'it, it seems to be that he's leaning in that favor, and that might be what colors his psak in the end, that says that if you go to someone's house, it's okay. But even Rav Avadya Yosef seems to indicate that even if you don't subscribe to it, that you can eat in someone's house that does use it. Obviously, the nice thing, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, when it came to Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, that even though they had a machloket between them with regards to Tzarot Erva, nevertheless, they did not withhold from marrying into each other's families. But they were modia. The Beit Shammai told Beit Hillel that these people were problematic for them, and Tzarot Erva, Beit Hillel told Beit Shammai which families were problematic. And therefore, if someone holds to a different standard and you invite them over your house, then we should try to accommodate them as much as possible because we don't have to force people to keep to our standard. On the other side, it's true if the other person didn't realize or wasn't aware of the fact you don't want to embarrass them. So there has to be a balance on both sides, both trying to accommodate those people that think differently than us, but also not embarrassing those people that are different. Now, it doesn't mean you have to give up on your halachic stances. You don't have to forfeit them just because it's the mana shalom, the mana yichud, but in instances where there's halachic openings to do it, then we should take advantage of doing that. And again, not embarrass people and also try to help. If other people hold differently than us, that we should try to provide for them whatever makes them happy so that they can come and feel comfortable in our homes. All right, anyway, that's just a little sidebar on this Perot Shel Azekah that he's announcing here, which according to Rashi and Tosafot would have a big nafkamina and shvi'it, what these Perot are of Azekah. So either way, what we saw from this Tanaic work is that these Perot, even though the Nachri is announcing that they are things that are completely Asur, all these items are Asurim, Lo Amar Klum. He didn't say anything. The Lo Nitkabim L'Ashbiach Mekcho. Because the whole point of him saying this is to advertise, to make it sound like he's got really good stuff here. So based on that, if I go back to the Nachri over here, the conclusion of the Gemara is that this guy also is just pounding his chest.
Right.
The reason that he's saying that he killed the other guy may not be because he killed the other guy. He wants to scare this guy and tell him, listen, if you don't do it, I'm going to kill you like the other guy. Doesn't mean he killed the other guy. It means that he wants him to think that he killed the other guy so that he does whatever he's asking of him. So based on that, we can't marry his wife off because we can't trust what he's saying. He's not Mesiach Lefi Tumo, even though he seemingly is, but he's using it as a threat. He's using it to hold it over the other guy, and therefore we can't trust him anymore because he is bragging, he's showing off, and therefore maybe what he's saying is not true. Abba Yudan Ish Tzaydan Amar Masebi Israel V'Ovid Kochavim brings down an incident, case law, where there was a Jew and a non-Jew traveling, Halchu B'Derech, Uva Oved Kochavim, and the non-Jew returns, Ramar Chavala Yehudi Sheyayimi. Woe, that Jew that was traveling with me, Baderech, Shemait Baderech. He died, Ukivartiv, and I buried him. So he volunteers the information that they were traveling together, and his traveling partner, this Jew, died on the way, passed away, and he says, I buried him, Bisiu Ishto, and they married off his wife based on that, meaning that they trusted him because he was telling information, not coming to give Eidut. He's just giving information, volunteering information, and therefore we believe him and allow his wife to get married. There was a group of individuals. Rashi translates kolar as chabura, but generally kolar is a terminology that's used for chains. People that are incarcerated, chained together. So this would be like a chain gang that was being taken up to Antochia. Antochia was the center of the rulership at that time. Up north, it was the head or capital city when the Greeks or Greco-Syrians were running Eretz Yisrael, and it remained a major city, even in the times of the Romans. So that people were being taken up there is not surprising. And we get this non-Jew that shows up and says, Chaval al kolar shel bnei adam shemetu. Whoa, unfortunately, this whole group of people died. Ukivartim, and I buried them. I buried them all, and he was believed. V'siut nishotehem, and they married off their wives based on his testimony. V'shuv maseh b'shishim bnei adam. There were 60 people. Sheyum alchim the karkom beitar. They were going to the siege of Beitar. This is likely in the Roman times when they laid siege to Beitar during the Bar Kokhba revolts, and then end up overrunning the city and killing everybody. Seems like they were on their way to Beitar, and either they didn't know it was under siege or they got caught up, but they ended up getting killed on their way to the siege of Beitar. Uvaoid kochavim, v'mar chavalo shishim bnei adam, she'amuchim b'derech Beitar. Whoa, those 60 people that I bumped into that were on their way to Beitar. Shemetu, they all died. Ukivartim, and I buried them all. V'siu nishotayim, and again, they married off their wives based on the testimony of this individual. So first of all, you see that a non-Jew is believed if he's Mesiach l'fi tumo. So over here, in all these cases, he's Mesiach l'fi tumo. He has no personal gain here. He has no reason to tell us the information. He volunteers the information just as if it's newsworthy, and just to say, whoa, I'm sorry that this happened, and I happened to take care of them, and therefore he's believed because he's not testifying. He's just bringing us information. And because he gives us that information, we can rely on the information. And the chiddush here is that in each of the cases, he's testifying about more and more people. In the first case, he only testified about one individual. Then he testified about a group of individuals. Then he testified about 60 individuals, which is extreme, by the way. I don't know how he buried 60 people. That's a lot of work for one individual to bury 60 people. And nevertheless, he's believed that he took care of this and this happened. And we rely on him. Now, it's, again, different than the case by the woman where the guy was killing. Because there he had a vested interest in saying it, and he was trying to show off. And that's why we don't believe him over there. Over here, where he has no reason to say this, he didn't say he killed them. He's just giving us the newsworthy item, and therefore they married off their wives based on that. You can testify, even if the identification of the body is done by candlelight, or by the light of the moon, and one is allowed to marry off, even if it's just a voice. Now, batkol here is not your typical batkol, heavenly voice coming out, but it's a voice who we don't know the source of the voice. There was this incident where a person was standing on a mountain, vamar, and he screams out, ish ploni ben ploni mimakom ploni. He gives all the identifying features of this individual. He's so-and-so, and from so-and-so. Mate, he died. They were halchu v'lo matzu sham adam. They go over there, and they don't find anybody over there. So somebody screamed this out, and identifying either themselves or someone was there identifying the body, saying this and this person is dead. But when they went over there, there was nobody there. V'siwat ishto. And they married off his wife based on that information. V'shuv maseh b'tzalmon. V'chad shamar. Ani ish ploni ben ish ploni nashchani nachash. He announces what his name is. I'm from here. I've been bitten by a snake. Vari ani mate. And I'm dying. I'm dying from this snake bite. Please, give the information over to my family. I mean, he doesn't say it that way, but he's announcing it so somebody will hear this information. They got there. There was a body there. But by the time they got there, the body was already decomposed, already had changed in a way that they couldn't recognize the body. They were unable to identify the body. Again, they used the voice to marry off his wife. So this batkol is not, again, a heavenly voice. It's where the information is conveyed to us, but we don't have the source of the information. By the time we get to where the evidence is, either the party that conveyed the information or the body is unrecognizable, and therefore we don't know who passed the information. We don't suspect, because of that, we don't suspect anything about the voice that somebody's trying to deceive us or to trick us. We rely on the information, because in the end, it's the only information we have. If we don't rely on this information, we're going to have nothing, because this, basically, this person's telling you he's all alone. And if we don't believe them, then this woman's going to be stuck. So, Amar Rabbi Bar Shmuel, Tana Beit Shemai Omrim, Ein Mesin Al Pi Batkol. Beit Shemai says, we don't marry off based on a batkol. Or Beit Hillel Omrim, Mesin Al Pi Batkol. And Beit Hillel says, we do marry off based on a batkol. Over here, it's not, again, the heavenly voice. It happens to be interesting, because the batkol was what was machria in the Gemara in Eruvin that says that Alocha ke Beit Hillel b'chol makom. Interesting note here that Beit Hillel says, yeah, we listen to the batkol, and Beit Shammai says we don't listen to the batkol. But again, it's a different batkol that we're speaking about. He said, my kamash malan. So, okay, fine. What's the difference if Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai argue about this? We know the Alocha is ke Beit Hillel, and our Mishnah is following Beit Hillel's position. Matznitani, it's our Mishnah, it's a Stam Mishnah. Gemara says, a kamash malan di mishtakachat stama de ein mesin. If you find a Stam Mishnah that says you don't marry off based on a batkol, Beit Shammai, it is Beit Shammai, you don't have to worry about it. You can ignore it. It's not that there's another Tano arguing over here and you have to worry about that position. Beit Shammai, b'makom Beit Hillel eino Mishnah, and therefore if we find a Tanaic work that supports that position, you don't have to worry about it. V'chu v'lo matzu, v'dilma sheid havo. So this is Fred's question over here. How can you trust the voice? How do you know who's speaking over here? So here the Gemara suspect, maybe it's a shade. Maybe it's a demon that's speaking, that's trying to trick people. Am Rav Yudam Rav, Sharo lo d'mut adam. He looked like a human being. They spotted somebody that looked like a human being. So inu nami damu. Wait a minute. The shadim could dress up like people too, and they can look like people. The chazulei b'boah. B'boah can mean two things. Usually it means a reflection. Although over here, the Rifarshim call it a tzel, the shadow. So it, for whatever reason, a shade has a shadow. So Gemara says, "Vinu nami bebua," that they have a shadow or reflection. The chazulei bebua debua, that it has a shadow of a shadow or reflection of a reflection. V'dimul didhu itlu bebua debua. Maybe they also have this feature. Amri b'chanina, amri Yonatan sheda. So here there are two interpretations Rashi brings. Yonatan sheda is either Yonatan the shade, or it's Yonatan the expert in shadim. So whether he's a shade or not, then bebua itlahu, they have a reflection or they have a shadow. Bibuah debuah leitlahu, but in a shadow, reflection of reflection, they don't have. So there's a way to make sure or to know whether he's a shade or not. So they had this information, so they were clear it wasn't a shade. Mar says, Bidilma tzarahavai. So this is the real question. Maybe it was the co-wife. The co-wife wants to finish off her co-wife. So she stands up on the mountain over there, screams out that the husband's dead. The co-wife gets married, ruins her life, and the husband shows up. And now the co-wife that did this is all free to marry the husband without her competition anymore. So Tana Debe Rabbi Shmuel, B'Shatza Kana Kutvim Notni Nafu Pishein Makirim. Says, in Shatza Kana, when there was danger, the danger we were speaking about is a time when people were restricted from performing mitzvot. Despite that fact, they were allowed to do things that we normally would not allow, which is that we allow the person to write a get, even though we don't know who the people are, we don't know who the parties are, because v'shata sakana, they have to do it quietly, they have to get it done. If they make it into a public issue, it's not going to get done. Now, sakana can come in two forms, either persecution, or it can come, he fell into a cistern. Now he's in the bottom of a cistern, he calls out and write a get for my wife. He says, kol shumei akoli, whoever hears my voice, ichtov get li ishto, should write a get. We rely on that voice, and kotvim get li ishto. And we're sumeich on it, because there's no other alternative. If we don't do it, it's not going to happen here. And so Rashi says the same thing. To be make on the agunot, they took some risk over here and allowed in evidence that otherwise we would be suspicious of in other instances, but they let it in here because we are faced with the choice of using this evidence and allowing this woman to go free, or ignoring the evidence because of the risk that there is some problem here, but we're not going to have another piece of evidence. This is the final piece of evidence because nobody else is going to be able to give us the same information. And because of that, it's considered to be shata sakana, and we give a waiver. Now the question is, how far does this waiver go? The Gemara here brings down to Rabbi Shmuel at the end of this sugya of the Gemara. Is this only referencing back to tzara, that we don't worry about a tzara because of this hekula of Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel, or does it go back on the whole sugya? We don't worry about a shade either. So the question is, how encompassing is this statement of Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel? Does that mean that any suspicions we drop and we just believe whatever voice we hear? Or we just don't suspect the tzara, but we do suspect that there are other people trying to misconstrue the truth here, and you have to worry about those people. And that's Machloket Rishonim over here as how to conclude the Gemara by Tana de Beit Rabbi Shmuel. Are they only going back on tzara, or are they going back on the whole sugya that we just read? All right, next Mishnah. This Mishnah is familiar to us because we quoted it earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Kuf Tet Zayin, which is Amar Rebbe Kiva Shiranti the Narda the Aber Hashana. When I went down to Narda, he left Eretz Yisrael to the east. Again, we find Rebbe Kiva leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to the west, to Rome. We don't often find him going to east. But here he went down to Narda to be Me'aber Hashana. Generally, you're not allowed to be Me'aber Hashana in Chutz La'aretz. Exception, and that's what Tosafot spoke about back on Kuftet Zayin, is if this is the greatest person of the generation, and he's the one who's going to do it, then we can do it. It may have been they only did the Chishuv, they only did the calculation there, but they actually did the actual Ibur in Eretz Yisrael. But Rabbi Kiva was there. Matzati Nechemia Ish Beit Deli. I found Nechemia Ish Beit Deli. Amar li shemati shemesina teisha b'Eretz Yisrael pi eid achad. I hear in Eretz Yisrael, they do not marry off women based on one aid. Ela Yehuda ben Bava. Yehuda ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is the only one who does this. I mean, that is a dat yachid. And all the chachamim argue on him. And therefore in Eretz Yisrael, they did not allow a woman to get married based on a testimony of an eid achad. And the ben omiti lo. And so I gave him my perspective on this, which is, Kena Dvarim. That's true. You're right. Samali and Morlehem, Mishmi. I want you to tell them over in my name. Atem Yodim Shia Medina Mishubeshe Begaisot. You know that this area has problems. Now back on the Gemara and the Kuftet Zayin, the Gemara had a Havamina that Mishubeshe Begaisot was part of the story. But in the end, it says no. That's the information about Nechemia himself. He says this area of Narada is under attack a lot, and therefore I have to stay here to protect my family, or that the road between Narada and Eretz Yisrael is full of bandits, and Nechemia was afraid to travel it. So he says, I can't get there to give them testimony in person. But you tell them, Mikublani mi Rabbi Gamliel Azakein, I have a Mesora from Gamliel Azakein, Shemesin et Aisha Pid Echad, that you're allowed to marry a woman based on an Eid Echad, Ukushibati Virzeti Adurim Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva says, when I return to Eretz Yisrael, to Rabbi Gamliel, this is Rabbi Gamliel, the grandson of Rabbi Gamliel as a Kain. This is Rabbi Gamliel in Yavne. And Rabbi Akiva comes back to Yavne and tells Rabbi Gamliel this information. Samach lidvarai. He was very excited about what I brought. Vamar. Matzanu chaver, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. We finally found someone who upholds, who corroborates this position, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. And mitocha davar nizkar Rabbi Gamliel. After this comes in, all of a sudden Rabbi Gamliel triggers some sort of memory in him. And shenergu arugim betel arza. There was this incident where there were people who were killed in Tel Arza. We see Rabbi Gamliel nishuteyan malpi ed echad. And Rabbi Gamliel married off their wives based on the testimony of an ed echad. Now, Rabbi Gamliel over here is most likely Rabbi Gamliel as a king, which is that he's telling about his grandfather. Rabbi Gamliel says, I remember my grandfather doing this. Over here, it doesn't mention Rabbi Gamliel as a king, but it seems from the story that that must be it, that he remembers that his grandfather did this. Based on this testimony that Rabbi Akiva brings back from Nehemiah, and that Rabbi Gamliel now remembers what his grandfather did, at that point they changed the halacha in Eretz Yisrael, and they began to follow the position of Yehuda ben Bava, which is misin eid mipi eid, that they started to marry out people with hearsay, not even a personal testimony, but they heard it from someone else, mipi eved, even from an eved, mipi isha, mipi shivcha, people that are normally psulei eidut. Nevertheless, we did believe them and allowed them to come to testify. Rabbi Leazev, Rabbi Yeshua Amrim, Eime Sina Teisha, Pi Eid Echad. You're not allowed to marry off a woman based on an Eid Echad. Ukiva Omer, Lo Al Pi Isha, Velo Al Pi Eved, Velo Al Pi Shivcha, Velo Al Pi Krovim. You're not allowed to use any of these people who are Psulei Ha'idut. Now, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Leazev, and Rabbi Yeshua seemingly have their position prior to this whole incident with Nehemiah Ish Beit Dali. Because after that, it seems that the minhag changed in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm assuming that they would have held like that, and they did not argue after that point. So seemingly their positions are from before that point in time. If you say that their positions are afterwards, what you have to do is differentiate between what we call aid, that you can use an aid echad, but the question of nemanut. That even though we allow the testimony of an aid echad, and even though we allow psulei eidut, we do have to worry about the fact that there are varyanim. So machloket abayin rova in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, if someone violates an isur d'oraita, someone violates an isur d'rabanan, whether they lose their ability to be an aid. And over there, seemingly there are two levels of losing your ability to testify. One is losing your status as an aid midoraita. The other one is losing your status as a ne'man, someone that who is believed, someone who has ne'manut. And so therefore over here, maybe what they're suggesting over here, by a shivcha and by an eved, and certain individuals, they don't have a status of nemanut. Not because they're psulei eidut, not because halachically they're not allowed to testify, but because they lack nemanut, period. And that way you could argue that the problem here that Rabbi Akiva is at least introducing here is even after they were allowed eid mipi eid, he still was posel these individuals because he felt they were not neman, they weren't trustworthy. And the whole point of allowing these individuals to testify here is because they have a certain amount of trust. And they don't have that trust, according to Rabbi Akiva. That's if you suggest that it happened after the prayer. Mara says, V'sover Rabbi Akiva api ishalo. Does Rabbi Akiva really believe that a woman cannot testify? V'atanya. V'shimun alazor omer v'shim Rabbi Akiva. Isha ne'menet la v'gita. B'kal v'chomer. A woman is believed to bring her own get. From a kal v'chomer. Man nashim shamru chachamim en ne'manot. The five women that are not trusted, lomar meit bala, to testify that her husband passed away. Ne'manot la v'gita'en. They're allowed to bring the get and bring it because we said earlier, the Mishnah said, because the ktav is mochiach, the edim are mochiach, we don't need these women. Zune emenet lomar beit bala. The wife herself is believed to say her husband passed away. Inudin shen emenet avigita. So then, isn't certainly she can bring her own get over here? So the Gemara says, nashim shamru chachamim udulo mehemne. Based on that kal v'chomer, it's clear it's only these women that the chachamim said that have a vested interest and seeing the downfall of this woman who could be vindictive, they're not believed. Isha ba'alma, mehemna. But generally, a woman would be believed in this case, because the woman herself is believed, and so are other women, based on this kal v'chomer. So the Gemara says, Lokasha, kan kodem shehechziku, kan acha shehechziku. That's Rabbi Akiva's position before. They changed the din based on what Nehemiah Ish Beit Dali sent. This is Rabbi Akiva's position after that. Now, the only thing in this Gemara that he changes is Isha. The question is, does that open up the other items, which is Shifcha and Eved? And that goes back to what we discussed before. What is the psul over here? Is the psul because they are not Nemanim, and therefore they shouldn't be Nemanim afterwards as well? Or is it that we accept all of these parties here, and even Rabbi Kiva, when he changes his mind about the woman, he changes his mind about all those individuals that he was posel before? Next Mishnah, final Mishnah in Yevamot. Amarlo maseh b'mnei b'levi shalchu l'tzohar irat marim. So there was this incident where there were a number of Levi'im traveling to Tzohar irat marim, at the city of the dates, v'chala achad mehem, and one of them fell ill, v'yaviu v'pundak, and they left him at a bed and breakfast because he couldn't continue traveling, so they left him there to rest. U'b'chazaratam amru l'pundakit ayei chavireinu. So he said, on the way back, they asked, what happened to our friend? No meat lahem. She responded to them. She gives them a whole speech. Mate, ukibartiv. He died, and I buried him. V'isiu et ishto. Then they married off his wife. V'lotei kohenet kipundakit. Now over here, kohenet is just an example. Kohenet means any woman from Klal Yisrael. Am Yisrael are mamlachet kohenim v'goy kadosh. So any woman should not be believed like a pundakit. Pundakit, there was a non-Jewish innkeeper. So here you're believing the non-Jewish innkeeper, you're not believing a regular Jewish woman. Amar luhu, so Rabbi Kiva responds to them, l'kshitei kepundakit, ne'emanet. So when she's like a innkeeper, they'll get the ne'emanut of an innkeeper. What do you mean? What does that mean? Because a pundakit hotzia lehem maklo v'tarmilo v'sefer Torah she'abiyado. She pulls out all of his personal items. And in pulling out his personal items and showing them to him, she was giving evidence of the fact that he had died, because he wouldn't have given up his staff, he wouldn't have given up his wallet, he wouldn't have given up his Sefer Torah if he was well, if he was still alive. The reason that she has all these items or these personal effects is because he clearly died. So again, this is something that was important. Yesterday when we mentioned about the World Trade Center, that in identifying some of the bodies were never found, or parts of the bodies were never found, but very personal items were found. So for instance, in one of the cases, there was a pair of pants that was found that had a wallet in it. It had a driver's license and a wallet in it, and there were fragments of skin in the pants themselves. So here in our Gemara, it says that we're choshesh l'sheila. We worry about like clothing that he lent it out to someone else. But when you're dealing with very personal items, like a wallet, and today, like pants, nobody lends out their suit pants or their business attire. They're very tailored. In that case, it is should be a positive identification for the individual, and they did rely in one case in the World Trade Center on this din, similar to what we have over here, when you have very personal items, things that people do not lend out, do not give out, that is a positive identification for the individual. My griuta de pundakit. What was wrong with this innkeeper that the Mishnah says, oh, if you believe the pundakit, you certainly should believe a Israelit. Am Rav Kahana pundakit overet kochavim haita. She was non-Jewish. Umisiacha lefi tuma haita. She was just speaking normally. This is his staff, this is his pouch, this is the grave that I made for him. She was non-Jewish, and she was just discussing, she wasn't testifying, she wasn't giving us edut. So Gemara says, wait a minute. What do you mean? She wasn't just talking out of the blue. They asked her. They prompted her with a question. They led her on. Where it says, Kevin dechazitinu bachya, because they saw her crying, amrula ayei chaverenu. Where is our friend? Amrulahem, mate ukivartiv. Died and I buried him. Tosafot already raises the issue over here, and so what? It's still, they're prompting her. They're leading the witness over here. You're saying she just was discussing it offhand, that she wasn't testifying. That's just not true. They prompted her. They asked her what happened. All right, so Tosafot says, V'yesh lomar, d'lo haita mamash misicha lefi tuma, d'mash yotziya maklo v'tarmilo, z'a haita yechola lasod kein le'edut. The fact that she took it out could have been for edut, and that's what Rabbi Kiva says. On the other hand, the chachamim over here see it as a raya because of the crying. And the crying already was an indication or a lead into the scenario. Now, what that means is unclear here. Rashi says, "Dekodim shalua itchilo lomar," that before they began to ask her, she began to say. What does that mean, she began to say? The Gemara says she was crying. Is Rashi mean by that, that the crying is an opening salvo, and therefore she was already speaking? Or when she was crying, she began to volunteer information, and they started to ask her more questions. They dug into it. So a number of things that come out of this. Number one is, if a non-Jew gives testimony, but not in the form of testimony, just says something, you're allowed to question them after the fact. Once they already said something, you can question them to clarify the information. That's not called edut anymore because they volunteered the information before they were deemed to be an aid. And then you're allowed to question them. Like in this case, you can question them. Number two is that the standard, according to Tosafot, to the threshold for Tosafot, that is considered mesicha litifi tuma, it doesn't mean that they just talked. It means that they have some sort of signs of distress, signs of being upset. That's enough already to consider a statement rather than the speaking, and you could question them even based on that, because that's a lead-in, and that's not considered to be edut, according to Tosafot. According to Rashi, it's not clear what that means. Does it mean that she has actually spoke while she was crying, or she just cried, and that's deemed as if she spoke? Tan Rabbanan. An individual came before Rabbi Tarfon to speak about or testify about this individual. Or Malo. Had you come across this information to testify that her husband passed away? Omer, ani v'hu, aynu holchim baderech. We were traveling together. Radaf acharenu gais. And we were chased down by bandits. There was a bunch of marauders, a militia that was chasing us. Vinitlabi chur shel zayit. And he grabbed a branch from the olive tree, snapped it off, and he fought off this militia or these marauders just with a stick, with a staff. Amarti lo, aryei, what a lion! You're so courageous, you're so amazing. Yashir kochacha, thank you so much. You saved our lives. Amar li, he turns back to me and says, minayin ata yodea, sharyei shemi. How do you know Maria is my name? How'd you know that? Obviously, he didn't mean that it was his name. He was giving him a compliment, you courageous lion. But meantime, it happened to be his name. Kach korim oti biiri. That's exactly what they call me at home. Yochanan birebi Yonatan Arye timikvar shichya. Says that's my name. They added on that little adjective describer to my name. I am Yochanan birebi Yonatan, the lion from Kvar Shichya. The Yamim Chala, after some more traveling time, he fell ill, umate, and died. And this individual comes and tells him, this is who this individual was. Now, he had no idea who he was. He didn't recognize him. He had never met him before in his life. Meantime, by the fact that he told them the information, they relied on him. They see Rabbi Tarfon at Tishto, and Rabbi Tarfon marries off his wife based on the story. For Rabbi Tarfon, no bai drisha v'chakira. Rabbi Tarfon doesn't require an investigation of the Adir to make sure he's telling the truth, to make sure that this information is actually correct. Drisha v'chakira are very loaded terms. They are terms of requirement of Beit Din to check out the Adim, b'dinei nefashot. Drisha and chakira, the drisha is to look into the matter, to check that the information is correct, the veracity of the information. Chakira is to check out things like when did it happen, what time did it happen, where did it happen, things that allow there to be Zomamim here, Edim to come and make them into Edim Zomamim. So all that information, why didn't he have to clarify that information? Vatanya, don't have a break to Masib Adam Achajibad Lifnei Rabbi Tarfon. There's an individual came for Rabbi Tarfon, seemingly the same story here with a little difference. How do you know about this information? We were walking together. Radaf Acharenu Gais. And again, we're chased down by a militia, by bandits. Benitla Biyichur Teina. He grabbed onto a branch of a fig tree, so slightly different version of the story. Upashcho, he snapped it off. And he chased them away. He stopped them from attack. He repelled them with the staff. Again, he says to them, wow, thank you, you courageous lion. Look what you did. You saved us. He says, how'd you know? You know my name. He says, Yochanan ben Yonatan, Aryeh de Mekvar Shichya. That's my name. Le'yamim chala, in the remainder of their journey, he fell ill, umate, and died. Amar lo, lo kacha martili. So Rabbi Tarfon says to the aide, isn't this what you sent to me? Yochanan ben Yonatan mikvar shichya aryeh? So he moved the modifier aryeh in the sentence from a descriptor of the individual to a descriptor of the city. So Rabbi Tarfon mixes it up and says, isn't that what you said to me? Amar lo. He says, no, el kacha martilcha, this is what I said to you. Yochanan ben Yonatan aryeh mikvar shichya. V'diktek alav shnayim u'shlosha pi'amim. Should really be grammatically shtayim v'shalosh pi'amim. But he did it two or three times. V'kivein et divarav. And every time he corroborated what he had said earlier, he was trying to trick him into saying that he really knew the information and he really remembered it. In the end he did. V'si Rabbi Tarfon et ishto. But over here you see Rabbi Tarfon grilling the aide, as opposed to the first case where he did not grill the aide. It's the same story. There's no question it's the same story. Two Tanaim are telling over the story. And Tanayehi, it's a machloket Tanaim. The Tanya, we have a brayta. In bebkim aidei nashim bedrisha v'chakira. We have a position that says that when it comes to aidei nashim, we're mekil, and we don't do drisha v'chakira with them. Divrei Rabbi Kiva is the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Rabbi Tarfon omer budkim. Rabbi Tarfon says we are budek. The other girsa, which is the girsa of the Gra, as well as of Tosfot Yishanim, you can see over here, is that Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon omrim budkim. That Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon agree that you budek, and there's another Tana. Aside from that, there has to be other Tanaim that argue in this, because if this is the position of Rabbi Tarfon, we just brought two stories of Rabbi Tarfon, and the Tanaim are arguing whether Rabbi Tarfon holds of this or doesn't hold of it. So it can't just be Rabbi Tarfon's position. It has to be somebody else's position as well. And the argument is, what is Rabbi Tarfon's position? It does Rabbi Tarfon do Drisha V'Chakira or not? The two stories bear evidence to either side of Rabbi Tarfon's position. But what you do see here is that there's a machloket about Drisha V'Chakira by Edei Nashim. What is the argument? Kamiflagebid Rabbi Chanina. They argue in the position of Rabbi Chanina. This is in the first daf of Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Rabbi Chanina. Dvar Torah, echad dinei mimonot, ve'echad dinei nefashot, ve'drisha ve'chakira. Everybody agrees that min haTorah, dinei mimonot, and dinei nefashot require drisha ve'chakira. When the edim show up, you gotta grill them. Either way, doesn't matter if we're talking about a civil monetary matter, or we're talking about a capital punishment matter. In all these issues, you have to have drisha ve'chakira, shenemar, mishpat, ve'echad yelechem. That there is a single procedure that is carried out by Beit Din. Single procedure means, doesn't matter what the case is, we do drisha v'chakira. So ma tam amru b'dinei mimonot ein tzrichim drisha v'chakira. Nevertheless, by dinei mimonot, we don't do that. We don't do drisha v'chakira. Lama? Shelo tinol delet b'fnei lavim. In order not to shut down the market, the liquidity for loans. People will not lend out money if they know that the recovery of their money is dependent on edim showing up and being grilled. Because when edim are grilled, most of the times they're going to fail the grilling. And they're not going to be able to find a deem that are going to get them their money back. So what is a creditor to do? He's not going to lend out anymore. If he knows that there's risk to him getting his money back because he's not going to have a deem that can corroborate his story because they get grilled, therefore he's not going to lend the money. So in order to facilitate a market of lending, the Chachamim said, we're going to allow in a dut, even though min haTorah, you need drisha v'chakira, we're going to waive that need in order to keep liquidity in the market for loans so people will continue to lend. Otherwise, if we don't do it, it's going to hurt the debtors, because the creditors just won't lend anymore. So the Gemara here quotes this as the source for the machloket here as whether Edei Isha need drisha v'chakira. Now, seemingly this is a very different case, but the Gemara says, Ubamai kamiflege, what are they arguing about? Marasavar came into Ika ktuba la mishkal kedinei mimono tami. Since there's a ktuba involved here, if we allow her to marry off, she also collects her ktuba, therefore it's like dinei mimonot. Marasavar came into kasharina neshet ish la'alma. It's a din of erva. If it's a din of erva, you need drisha v'chakira. Now, this is a hard, hard gemara for a number of reasons. Even if she collects her ketubah, that doesn't change the fact that you're also being matzer, the woman, to erva. So why does that change the dynamic over here? Number two is, the heter by dinei mimonot was to create liquidity in the market, lending liquidity, which is not relevant by this case as well. So all the rishonim have to speak over here. They all come to a similar type of conclusion, which is either because we're talking about Edut Isha, and just like by Edut Isha, we're trying to facilitate an ease by which to allow these women to get married and not be agunot, it's similar to the case of the monetary matter where we wanted to create liquidity in the market. Because of the need to create liquidity, we were a mekil. So too over here, by Edut Isha, even though, again, yes, there's a ketubah, but that's not the whole reason here. The whole reason really is that by Edut Isha, we needed to allow in what otherwise would not be good evidence in other cases in order to prevent agunot. And this is just an extension of that, which is, if we do drisha v'chakira, we're going to eliminate people that otherwise could give us the information we need. And therefore, we obviate that need in order to facilitate the testimony over here. That's the way the Rambam seems to be going and some of the other Rishonim. The Ramban and others suggest over here that even though the ketubah is not the ikar part of it, but nevertheless, since the ketubah is part of the framework that we allow, since we're going to be mako by the ketubah, we'll be mako by the other side. I mean, it's just a side way to get into being mako by the Edut Isha. It's of a similar vein to what the Rambam is saying, but not saying it in a little more of a side backhanded way, which is, yes, ketubah is involved here, and since, by definition, she will get her ketubah, and even if she doesn't get married, she will get her ketubah, so it could be a dinei mimonot, so therefore also we allowed her to go through by the dinei isha. Now it's true that we do not do drisha b'chakira, but we are more me'ayim on the edim. When the edim show up, we say that we pressure them, since we are very mako in the standards of who is an aid, and the standards of evidence, over here we say to the edim, we want you to know that this is a serious issue, and they tell them you need to tell the truth, and there's a lot more iyum put on the edim to say that we are relying on you, and you need to know that you're telling the truth. If you don't tell the truth, we're going to find out, and it's going to wreck your reputation, and so on and so forth. So we do put a little pressure on the edim, but we don't put a pressure on the sense to undermine their testimony through little nitpicking at their testimony, like we would do with drisha v'chakira in a capital case, because we want the testimony to go through, and we want to free the women. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Chanina, Tamidei Chachamim Rabim Shalom Be'olam, Tamidei Chachamim increase shalom in the world, Shenemar V'chol Banayich Lumudei Hashem, Rav Shalom Banayich, Al Tikra Banayich, Elo Bonayich. That's the end of the Masechta. This is the same line that ends four Masechtot in Shas. Many of the Rishonim point out that the Rosh Tevot of the Masechtot that end with this Pasuk and this Drasha are Banayich. Banayich is Brachot, Nun is Nazir, Yud is Yivamot, and Kaf is Kretot. All three of these Masechtot end with this phrase. It makes a lot of sense here to end this Masechta with this line. We obviously want to end off on a good note. But more importantly, the reason that the Chachamim were makil by Edut Isha was in order to bring Shalom the Olam, was in order to free a woman and make sure that a woman has the opportunity to marry and to rectify what otherwise would be a very difficult situation. So here the Chachamim are making efforts to bring Shalom the Olam, and that's why they end off with this statement that the Talmidei Chachamim bring Shalom the Olam. And with that, we end Masechet Yevamot, Hadran Alach, Aisha Batra, Slikala, Masechet Yevamot.